Welcome to We Mix Children's Books, the podcast that takes you through the imaginative minds of children's book authors and artists. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and in today's episode, we're excited to be talking with the Amazing Tales creator, Martin Lloyd. Amazing Tales is a world-renowned children's role-playing game that has sparked the imagination of an entire generation of kids everywhere.
Big fan of the book. My six-year-old daughter loves playing it. She made a character called Bianchel. She doesn't know what this character is, but we do know that she is good at flying, jumping, and climbing. So, okay. There you go. And before we jump into it, do you want to first kind of give a little bit of a background to how you got into developing this game and how you got into game design in general?
Sure. So first, it's great to be here. So how did I get started? Well, so it would have been 7 years ago now. It was a rainy day. I was sat at home looking after my daughter, and we needed something to do. So I made up a little role-playing game to play with her. A friend of mine I knew had done something similar for his daughter, and I thought, well, I can do that too. Just sounds like fun. And it went well. She loved it. And so we kept playing that. And a couple of years later, I guess, I was lucky enough to be able to take a paid sabbatical from my job with a proviso that, you know, you don't just sit on the sofa. You do something useful with that time. Go and learn a language or take a course or something like that. So I said, well, you know, I have this game that I play with my daughter, and I think I'm going to turn it into a book. So that was my kind of project for my sabbatical. Initially, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a book or if it was just going to be a PDF, or if it was going to be kind of something like Lady Blackbird, where you've got kind of one piece of art and four pages, and it's still a great game. But I set out to do that, and I started writing. I started looking around for an artist, and I was lucky enough to find that one of my prior colleagues was setting out as an illustrator for herself. She was happy to do the project. I was happy to work with her. And that kind of created the opportunity to turn Amazing Tales into a full book with loads of pictures, loads of illustrations. And then, thanks to the magic of DriveThruRPG and that kind of stuff, got it out the door. Was delighted to discover that it sold pretty well, sufficiently well that I decided to try and do a print run. Approached a couple of distributors about would they like to have it, and Studio 2 said yes. So suddenly I had, you know, a print run and a distributor and online sales going on. And I'm lucky enough that sort of my wife and I are pretty financially secure. So we were able to sit down and say, you know what, I would like to take a crack at doing this. So I will stay home, look after the kids, and try and turn Amazing Tales into something a bit bigger. That's the potted history of it in a nutshell.
And what I love about this too is that you basically have the same illustrator that for the main book and also for all of your expansion books that you've kind of put together too, correct?
Iris did everything for the main book and the first expansion.
Oh, okay.
But then she basically became very successful and went off to do more stuff. Her timelines and my timelines no longer lined up. So since then, I've been working with a Brazilian artist called Ayu Marquez, who has been doing the subsequent stuff. Okay. It's a little bit different, but it's got that same kind of, you know, sense of childish adventure to it. That's right. Kind of what makes Amazing Tales work.
You have a lot of products that are on DriveThruRPG right now. You also, I remember hearing you in a previous interview, talked about these 21 one-page
things to do in lockdown. Lockdown started. We have an Amazing Tales Facebook group where people can come and talk about the game and share stuff they've been doing. Somebody posted just a little two-page PDF and said, hey, I played this game with my kids yesterday and I really liked it, so I've written it up for you guys. And, you know, it involved a well-known friendly equestrian franchise. So I said kind of, well, that looks brilliant. I can't do anything with it, but I really like the sort of format. I thought, well, maybe I can write one myself. I sort of put together a template and wrote a one-page adventure. I thought, okay, I'll do another one and another one. And it seemed like people liked them. You know, I was putting them out and they were getting all of them a few hundred downloads on their first day. And so I set myself a target of doing one adventure for every piece of character art in the core Amazing Tales book, which meant 21 adventures. I didn't tell anyone that was the target because I am not by nature a completer finisher, but I stuck to it. So every weekday I got one out of the door, plundered various different things for inspiration. So there is a kind of disaster movie one. There's a alien one. There's a sort of sword and sorcery Conan style one. And yeah, I had a lot of fun writing them. There's a procedurally generated dungeon one. I got some lovely feedback from people saying, you know, this had helped give them something to do while they were stuck in the house with their kids. And then it all kind of got bundled up and put into one big PDF. And then just as that was winding up, the whole Black Lives Matter thing kicked off. So I kind of rolled the compilation into the Black Lives Matter bundle. And then since then, it's been available as a charity compilation with, you know, a different charity getting the monies every month.
Did you know that this was a niche that needed to be filled with this new generation of parents who kind of grew up on Dungeons and Dragons at home?
Kind of hoped. So I mentioned I did this during my sabbatical, and just before I started the sabbatical, I'd done a course on product design and some design methodologies. So I decided to do it properly, and I did go out into the community and talk to lots of people who already played role-playing games with their kids. And I kind of found two camps, if you like. One was the people who really want to play Dungeons and Dragons with their kids. They don't want to play anything else. They want to play Dungeons and Dragons with their kids. And some of them have realized that Dungeons and Dragons is a bit much for four-year-olds. And the game that those guys play is HeroQuest. You know, if you want moving around on a grid, if you want fighting lots of different monsters, if you want hit points and all that kind of stuff, Hero Kids is the game for you, and it does it very well. And then there were the other people who wanted to play role-playing games with their kids and wanted to explore all the different kinds of things that role-playing games can do. There didn't seem to be so much catering for those guys. So I was hoping that, you know, if I could write something flexible and story-driven that was really let you do all kinds of different things, that would be the sweet spot for them. And it turned out to work. So yeah, I didn't know there was an audience, or I knew there was an audience, but I didn't know how big it was.
Good storytelling, not good storytelling, but like, you know, imaginative storytelling and rules, are those two mutually exclusive of each other? Like, can you have a lot of rules and still be able to tell giant stories?
Yeah, you can. It's I think it's about thinking quite hard about what kind of storytelling you want your game to facilitate. One game some friends of mine wrote, which I'm a big fan of, is an indie game called Lovecraft-esque, which is about creating your own Lovecraft story. And with the premise that Lovecraft stories were, you know, horrific stories where the monsters were unique and you'd never seen them before. So that's not what you get in a game of Call of Cthulhu, where, you know, somebody has kind of gray, slimy skin and everyone knows it's a Deep Ones scenario coming up. This was about kind of, let's create something that's genuinely weird and unusual every time we play. And so Lovecraft-esque works on this structure where you have three or four players, but no GM, and one character. And each sort of round of play, if you like, somebody will introduce a clue into the narrative as to what's going on. And at the end of each round, everybody writes down for themselves what they think is happening. So you sort of, it's called jumping to conclusions. So, and then just before you do the finale of the game, you kind of all take out your bits of paper and pitch what you think is going on. And then the most horrific one is the most interesting one for the table is the one that you follow up. So Lovecraft-esque is pretty heavy, you know, in terms of rule structure. There's a very tight structure on the game. There's very clear things that everybody is supposed to be doing every moment, but it produces these amazing stories. So no, it's not that rules don't support storytelling, but I think if you want your rules to support storytelling, then either they need to really keep themselves out of the way, which is what happens in Amazing Tales, or you need to have a really strong idea about what kind of story you want and then build a game that supports that.
Okay. And do you see some of the questions that you're seeing and some of your the feedback and the forums that you're a part of or that you've created, how much of a unconscious bias or pushback do you get from adults who are saying, put this rule in, put this rule in, put this rule in?
A little bit, I think, but it tends to go away if they've played the game. That's the odd thing. You know, there is this weird thing of people critiquing role-playing games that they haven't played. And I think you have to play a game if you're going to really have an opinion on it. I think you can look at the rules, but until you've actually tried to use them the way the designer intended, it's quite hard to really critique something. But no, people seem to get that pretty quickly, that kind of you can do whatever you want and that the character generation system really pushes you towards that approach. But there are people who keep trying to put things in because they assume that games need them. So hit points is my bet noir. Some people just feel it's not a role-playing game if it hasn't got hit points. And the other one is that the Games Master should roll dice. So the Games Master in Amazing Tales never rolls dice. And some people just like rolling dice for the monsters. So fine. You know, once the game is out of my hands, it's your game. So do what you like with it. But I would encourage you to at least play it once without hit points and the GM rolling dice.
How's the character creation work on this? For someone who just gets the book and they want to sit down and just play it with their 5-year-old or their 10-year-old or their 15-year-old.
Yeah, so you grab your small child and you ask them what kind of story they want to make up. And hopefully they give you an answer you can work with. And then you ask them what kind of hero they think they want to be in that story. And they might say a superhero, or they might say a fairy or a princess or a pirate. Or they might say a giant robot dinosaur with arms and forearms. So there's an example of that in the book. Or a friend of mine whose son came home from school and said, "Daddy, Daddy, I want to play a game. We have to play Amazing Tales. Can we all be different viruses?" Because that's what he'd been learning about at school. And then the game supports that. So to make a character, you just need to come up with 4 things that character might do. Your giant dinosaur might be very good at chomping things in half. He might be very good at being really noisy. He might be able to fly. In the case of the one my son came up with, he might also be super stealthy. And then you're basically done. You assign a different dice to each of those skills, a D12, a D10, a D8, and a D6, based on how good, or you know, the biggest dice going to the most favored skill. And that's it, you're done. And what I've loved hearing is what people have done with the different skills. In the book, you get fairly straightforward ones, you know, kind of swashbuckling or running really fast or being able to talk to animals or whatever it is. But some people started taking skills like having an army of spaceships. Being a princess was one of my favorite ones. Someone sent me a character sheet their daughter had come up with. So she's a big fan of the Clone Wars. So we've got, you know, flying starships. We've got shooting a blaster. We've got being a princess. But I just love that kind of being a princess skill. It's so useful. You could do so much with it, you know. The evil tyrant tries to intimidate you. Well, I'm not intimidated. I'm going to be a princess at him.
And you do have rules on there as alternative rules for 6-sided die, but basically the core game is that you should have a 12, a 10, an 8, and a 6-sided die, correct?
Yeah, and that's basically because kids like rolling multi-sided dice.
Right.
You know, I don't encourage anyone to think too hard about the probabilities in the game, because I didn't. Kids like rolling dice.
And what it's like, if it's like anything, a 2 or a 1 is a failure.
Yeah. So a 3 or more is a success. And I think between that and the character creation bit, we've now explained the entire rules of Amazing Tales.
That's it, right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Find out what the other 96 pages by buying the book.
The biggest part about the restriction on this is probably the parent keeping up with the ideas with the kid.
Most of the games parents play with kids are very boring for the parent. And however much you love your child, you do not want to play the 50th game of Snakes and Ladders. And this is great because it sort of evens out that cognitive load. So the parents have to think pretty hard and work pretty hard to stay, you know, to keep pace with an active child who is pushing all the buttons in their adventure. And the kids, you know, role playing is an effort for kids. You know, a 4-year-old can keep it going for about 20 minutes, half an hour, and then they get distracted and tired. But for everyone who's doing it, it's an activity that you do together that both of you have to work at, and you get something really good out of. And that seems to work really well for people, that kind of that you're doing it together, you both enjoy it in a way that kind of playing with your kids is not always enjoyable. So
you're bringing people into this genre of people who've never even put their foot in this type of water before.
So, yeah, I did work quite hard to make all the introductory text, you know, as clear as possible in terms of this is what you're going to be doing. And framing it as you're making up a story together, that seems to really work. Everyone understands you don't win a story. And everyone kind of understands that if you're making it up, then you start without one and you finish with one. So I think that kind of framing seems to have worked for people. Talking about it in that way, and perhaps as something you might do instead of a bedtime story, I think that's really helped locate it for people as kind of, okay, this is what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, you're right, because parents can identify with telling a bedtime story. Like, this is like telling a bedtime story with dice. And what would be your advice to people that are listening that would want to know how to get their game on shelves as well?
Yeah, so there's it sounds obvious, but there's two parts to this process. One is writing the game, the other is getting it out there. Playtesting is very important. I was lucky. My playtesters are members of my family. They're captive, and you know, they're a bit older now, but at the time they couldn't say no. So it was thoroughly playtested. But I did make a point of actually trying to play it with some other people's kids as well, prior to kind of putting it out there as a thing. But do playtesting. I've been working with a friend of mine to playtest his forthcoming game, and that's a much more meaty, grown-up kind of system. And, you know, it's been an education for everyone involved, just kind of sitting down at the end of a session going, okay, what worked? Why did it work? What would we do differently? Okay, what was down to us as players and what was down to the rules? You know, that's quite a big thing in playtesting role-playing games is, okay, did that work well because of the dynamic at the table? You know, did the game create that dynamic at the table? What would happen if people behaved differently? Or, you know, those kind of questions. So do your playtesting, get the thing written and get it finished, and then get it out of the door. I think if you've got a really good game, then the barrier to launching it is not that high these days. You know, publish something straightforward and simple. Put it on Itch or Drive-Through or wherever you want and tell people about it and try and get them to play it. And if people like it, then you can do a Kickstarter and make a super deluxe version with all the bells and whistles. But just kind of getting something out there the first time, I think is an important step. Having a product you can point to and say, I did that and I'm proud of it, is important. Yeah, what else would I say? Hustle, lots of hustle, you know, Do spend the time on the social media groups, talking about your game, telling people why it's good, putting the time in. Do contact lots of podcasts and journalists and people, and most of them will ignore you, but some of them won't. I would say it's quite important not to stop talking about it. So lots of designers who've been going for about as long as me are onto their fourth, fifth, sixth game. But I think there is a tendency to kind of go, right, I've done my game, it's out on. Rather than let's try and build something up around playing this game and keeping it in circulation.
So that is a good question. Do you feel as though this is kind of westernized? Or is there any updates that you're thinking of how to have this accessible to other parts of the world as well?
Yeah, well, so far we have got translations in Polish, Italian, and Brazilian Portuguese.
Oh, wow.
And if anybody out there wants to produce a translation of Amazing Tales, get in touch. I'm open to good offers. So those are the languages that have been done, and I'm hoping there'll be more. So far, it's basically been a case of translate the text, take the artwork and put it out there. I deliberately made the artwork in the book, you know, really quite diverse. So I like, you know, anyone who plays Amazing Tales should be able to pick it up and see someone who looks a bit like them. It's kind of, but yeah, so the artwork's diverse. So in terms of localizing it for other cultures, there might be places where you would want to redo some more of the artwork, just places where, you know, a notion of a knight in armor maybe wouldn't make so much sense looking the way they do, or pirates would look very different.
And there's also some supplement books that people can get now from DriveThruRPG right now. Do you want to talk quickly about some of those other supplement books that you have?
Yeah, so there's three sort of mini campaigns that are out now. There's a fourth one coming. So those are The Quest for the Dragon Crown, The Cryptid Conundrum, and Captain Cadaver's Treasure. And the fourth one will be called A Dream of Trees. And those, in the book, there are four settings presented, and then each one of these campaigns fits with each setting. So Captain Cadaver's Treasure is the pirate adventure that goes with the pirate setting, and so on. And what you get in those is you get a pre-written adventure. So the book is packed with advice about how to make up your own adventure with your kid and have it be entirely your thing. I did discover that people wanted, you know, a bit more framework, and people were like, you know, can you provide us with a pre-written adventure? So, well, okay, here you go. And with these, I've set myself the target of kind of, if you've got a pre-written adventure, you've got the chance to maybe aim a bit higher to try and build some really big dramatic peaks in and do some clever stuff. So I tried to do that with all the different games. And, if there are any children watching who are planning on playing The Quest for the Dragon Crown, close your ears now. But at the end of The Quest for the Dragon Crown, you find a dragon crown. What does it do? It's a magical thing that turns you into a dragon. So for the end of the game, your character has the option to turn into a dragon. And, the system, it turns out, is so simple that if your character's a dragon, it works exactly the same way as when your character is not a dragon. But yeah, I've heard that kids really, really get super excited at the moment when that happens, that you've gone through all these quests, you've found this magical item, you've had to deal with all this stuff, you get it, and then what does the amazing thing it does? Okay, it turns you into a dragon, and then you get to go off and fight the big bad dragon and his dragon army, but your dragon. So that's just dragon-tastic, frankly. That's the kind of thing you can aim for if you're writing these. And then The Cryptid Conundrum is for kids who are a little bit older, but I packed it full of codes and code wheels. And so you can, hang on, let's see if you can see this. So this is a cryptid encryption device, which you can use to crack the codes which they have left behind for some fiendish reason.
One of your, a parent asked you about, I don't want conflict in the game. Do you want to talk to us about how you created Recipe City in response to that?
Yeah, so they didn't want violence. And we talked about this earlier. This is quite an important distinction. So
yeah,
they said, you know, how do I have a non-violent game?
Right.
And I thought about it, and I sent them a slightly flippant response in good humor, which was, well, just don't put any in. And then I thought, well, okay, but if you don't put violence in, what goes there instead? And this, I think, is a question that role-playing games in general have been bad at answering. You know, so many role-playing games basically boil down to, and now we have a fight. And you could even suggest that, you know, most adventures basically just boil down to working out who you're supposed to be fighting and when and why, and then you do it. Which is maybe not, you know, ideal, given the huge array of stories we could be telling. So I had to think about, you know, other kinds of conflict, and there's some blog posts on the website about this. And Rescue City came out of that. So Rescue City is a game, or is a setting, where you can have thrilling adventures that don't actually involve violence. So the idea is that your characters would be members of the emergency services. So you might be a police officer, you might be a firefighter, you might be a doctor or a surgeon or an ambulance driver. And then, you know, stuff happens, and it could be, you know, as simple as a cat stuck up in a tree. that's quite exciting sometimes if you're four. But it could also be, you know, there's an earthquake and all these different things are going on in the city and you have to keep people safe and deal with them. Or it could be as a skydiver has got themselves stuck on top of a statue on top of a skyscraper and now you have to go and rescue them. You know, that's an exciting story to tell. And there's plenty you can do with that. And nobody has to have a fight.
You could easily be playing a giant robotic dinosaur with four arms.
Saving people. Squad. Yeah, on the rescue squad. Absolutely.
How many of have you heard of any anything coming out from any of the blog posts or people have sent you emails by saying, because of this story, I was able to write a children's book, or I was able to do this, or I was able to create something based off of adventures that they were a part of with their children?
No. That'd be good, though. If anybody's done that, you know, write, tell me about it, and then we'll talk about my percentage. And then the next thing I'm working on at the moment is called Amazing Heroes. And this is two things. It's the superhero setting for Amazing Tales, which lots of people have asked for. And it's also a bunch of slightly more advanced rules. So my sort of design ambition is that if you were to play this for a couple of hours, you should probably get through as much story as you would get if you sat down and watched an episode of The Flash or something like that, or Arrow or whatever. So it's kind of pitched at that kind of superhero, and it's pitched at kind of that intensity of storytelling. You know, you should be able to get through a lot in an evening of a couple of hours play. So that's the Amazing Heroes project. And Amazing Heroes will include all the things that people tell me are missing in Amazing Tales. So which I think of as the consequences. So if you go on adventures and learn things, you will gain experience and your character will become better and more amazing. And so there'll be an experience system. There will also be rules for bad stuff happening to you that might be persistent. So getting hurt, getting injured, possibly even getting killed. So those will be options in the game, along with advice about how to manage them. One thing I've realized writing this, I've been trying to keep the rules component of all of this as short as possible. Amazing Tales has super simple rules, and I think that's why it works. But one of the things I'm trying to do is to support the rules that there are with lots and lots of Games Master advice. My approach to this is that, you know, Games Masters are amazing things. They have human brains, which are quite fantastic storytelling machines. And you should try and sort of set those loose to do their best. That's kind of some of the thinking going on into Amazing Heroes. And
Have you kind of defined how the superhero system works? Is there like a second column of skills that are here, like superpowers, and then there's also your other skills?
Yeah, this is one of the things I'm sort of testing at the moment, is how different do you want to make that? So I have done, one of my playtesters went, yes, you've written a big list of superpowers like everyone else has. I don't know, I'm not feeling very satisfied with this kind of giving people a list of things your hero can be super at. I think the kind of make up your own is probably the way to go. But then I do want this game to be more playable by adults, and that maybe demands a little bit more sort of consistency and verisimilitude. Just trying to work out how people would scale their powers. So, you know, if you've got a D6 in telekinesis, all right, what does that actually mean compared to someone who's got a D12? And how are we going to handle things like player versus player? Because in the superhero genre, that happens all the time. You know, they're constantly getting their minds taken over and having fights with the other members of their team and that kind of stuff. But yeah, so superpowers will work a lot like regular skills, but possibly in a way that lets them kind of develop some depth as you build them up and learn more about them. And I like the idea of superhero characters kind of starting with a really basic power and then building on it as they go and discovering new stuff about themselves. So I want to have an element of that in there.
You're going to be pulling in the same, you know, trying to get your same illustrators back for this as well?
There'll definitely be some of them, although I've been thinking about how to do it and whether I might want to work with someone who's done sort of superhero comic type illustration and that kind of thing. So I'm having a little bit of a think about the art direction for this one. So far, everything's been very consistent, but I'm also wondering if I want to kind of give this a full-on superhero treatment or something like that. So we shall see. It might all be down to how well the Kickstarter does anyway.
You know, compared to other folks, you've got a really loyal fan base. And I think it shows, is like you were saying, it's good to just, you know, stay active in your products.
Yeah, stay active. Keep talking to people. On my list of things to do this year was go to lots of role-playing conventions. Obvious reasons that's not happened. But as soon as the conventions are back, I will at least be at European ones. I will try and get over to the States. And I'm really looking forward to meeting some people who've played my games.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to the first time I kind of meet someone who's sort of 18 or 20 or something who says, yeah, I've been playing role-playing games for 14 years, thanks to you. I think that'll be pretty interesting.
Yeah. And they also can probably go out there and you know, if they do that, they should, you know, making sure as well that they're out there and that they actually, what I was really impressed when I was going to your website is that you actually have coffee cups, which I think is fantastic.
So this, you know, listen to your audience. So some people said, you know, can we get posters? Can we get t-shirts? Can we get stuff? So this is my Redbubble website, where you can get all kinds of Amazing Tales merchandise.
So where can people find you?
So let's see. I'm amazing-tales.net is the website, and everything is linked from there. But also facebook.com/talesamazing. We had to do it backwards because somebody else got there first. I'm on Twitter as Mr. Lloyd GP. I think that kind of covers it. Oh, I'm on Instagram. I should probably know what the account name is, but I don't. There are links. It's fine. Google Martin Lloyd Amazing Tales. It'll all work.
It'll be there.
Yeah. If you want to get hold of me, send me an email. Or DM me on Twitter. Those are the best ways.
The best ways. Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Martin. And I'll look forward to when you're putting out your new Kickstarter for your superheroes. Let us know. We'd love to talk to you about it.
Yeah, I will. This has been fun.
And, all right.
Yeah.